This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Cooking took on a new meaning for Chef Robert Lehman when he started cooking for people with AIDS. After working in restaurants and running a catering business, he became the chef at a Philadelphia group called Manna, which prepares and delivers meals for people with AIDS who are housebound. Now he's the project's coordinator for HIV nutrition research at the Graduate Hospital in Philadelphia. He's written a new book called Cooking for Life, a guide to nutrition and food safety for the HIV community. It's filled with advice on nutrition, dealing with diarrhea, and how to avoid food contamination, which is critical for someone with a compromised immune system. I asked Robert Lehman if there are foods that can slow down or reverse wasting, the extreme weight loss that usually accompanies AIDS.
You have to come at it from two angles. One is to offer as much that will supply lean body mass to a person, when that's the protein component of their diet. And the other thing is to not do things that are going to aggravate the system, to cause diarrhea, to cause digestive upsets and things like that.
Why don't you compare some of the nutritional and caloric needs of people with AIDS to healthy people?
Well, as an example, people with compromised immune systems very frequently have infections, logically enough. For every degree of fever that you have, your metabolic needs increase by about 7%. So you can see even if you have a three-degree fever, you should be taking in more than 20% more food than average, because even though you feel exhausted and are lying in bed, your body's actually burning a great deal of caloric nutritional material. And so you need a higher caloric intake just to maintain your baseline weight. Beyond that, the most important thing is not that you burn fat, but that you tend to burn lean body mass first in your stores of muscle mass. And later, as you compromise that, your organ tissues begin to become diminished, and therefore your body's overall metabolism becomes compromised.
People with AIDS have compromised immune systems, so they have to really take precautions that they're not eating any kind of food that will be carrying bacteria. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of things that we don't think about, or at least I don't think about, that you mentioned in your book that I thought, gee, we'd all better be thinking about this, even things like can openers. Mm-hmm. Tell me what to be concerned about with a can opener.
Well, the greatest risk for food poisoning in this country is through cross-contamination. We have streamlined food delivery systems and refrigerations and everything else that prevent outright spoilage, but all too often people just will open a can and toss their can opener back in the drawer, and the minute particles of food that are left on the blade will just sit there and rot. They're a perfect culture for bacteria, and then they get forced into the next opened can. I don't think anybody would consider not washing down a cutting board or a knife, but that's what we do with a can opener. And so that's the single greatest vector of food poisoning in this country.
What about cutting boards? Wooden cutting boards can be great breeding grounds for bacteria. What do you suggest?
There's a great debate about wooden versus plastic cutting boards, but this has been studied ad nauseum, and plastic ones certainly are much easier to clean and sanitize. The best thing to do is to keep two cutting boards, one that you use for only things that you're going to eat raw, like if you cut up an apple, cut up salad greens, things like that. And another cutting board for things that are going to be cooked, like raw chicken, so that you never cross-contaminate the raw produce with raw animal products that are the greatest source of contagion.
What about microwaving food? Does that automatically kill any germs?
No, it does not. Microwaving is not a bad way to cook, particularly, but it does leave pockets of food undercooked if you don't do it correctly. That's why most modern microwaves have turntables, is to equalize that bombardment. But if something is very large or has an irregular shape to it, still there may be places where it's not thoroughly cooked. So just the microwave bombardment itself does not destroy bacteria.
Water. Can you drink tap water if you have a compromised immune system?
It's really a chancy consideration. Cryptosporidium, which is a microorganism that is increasing in the water supplies in America, is something that is extremely virulent, causes copious watery diarrhea, and we have no cure for at this point. This is not just a matter of something that we're becoming more conscious of. It is a growing problem in America. More and more cities are having outbreaks of it. And filtered water that's properly filtered, most spring waters, things like that, are the safest route. This depends on how fragile your immune system is.
Oh, something I learned from your book is that it can be unsafe to eat stuffing that's packed into a chicken or a turkey. Mm-hmm. Explain why.
Well, in this country, one out of every four chickens has salmonella. And as you pack the stuffing into it, of course, it comes in contact with the raw chicken. And yet, the interior of that stuffing rarely reaches the 160 degrees necessary to destroy the salmonella. And I mean, if you cook a stuffed turkey or chicken till the stuffing is that hot, the chicken is just destroyed. It is dry as a bone and just probably collapsing off the bone. It's so overcooked. So it's very rare that stuffing would be cooked until it was warm enough to destroy the bacteria.
So this bacteria, I suppose, is not a threat to average people, but if you have a compromised immune system,
well,
it could spell trouble?
It can spell trouble for anyone. It's actually estimated that 70% of the 24-hour flus and gastrointestinal upsets that we have in this country in the general population are actually mild cases of food poisoning. Food poisoning is actually very common, much more so than people tend to realize. But to give you an idea, the primary AIDS-defining illness in America is pneumocystis pneumonia, and there are about 25 cases of that diagnosed every day. Every day in America, 25 people die of food poisoning, and 16,000 people, it's estimated, become ill. So if you walk that back to the greater susceptibility, people with AIDS are 7 times more susceptible to salmonella poisoning, and they are between 200 and 300 times more susceptible to listeriosis. So food poisoning is a serious consideration for anyone, but it's a very, very serious consideration for someone with a compromised immune system.
Do you think it's safe for someone with a compromised immune system to eat in a restaurant where sanitary conditions are not always what we'd like them to be?
I would be very, very cautious about that. And the safest thing that you can do is to eat food that is served piping hot. I would not go to a salad bar, for instance. You don't know how it's been handled or who sneezed over it. But if something comes to you steaming hot, then it's probably still at a temperature that any contamination would have been destroyed.
Robert Lehman is my guest, and his new book is called Cooking for Life, A Guide to Nutrition and Food Safety for the HIV-Positive Community. Of course, one of the problems that people with AIDS often have is diarrhea.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a problem, frankly, that a lot of people have, not as consistently, but they have it or they're going to have it. And I think you have a lot of interesting advice for dealing with that problem. What are some of the best foods to eat if you have diarrhea?
The famous diet that was developed by the San Francisco General Hospital is called the BRAT diet. And that stands for bananas, rice, applesauce, tea, and toast. And those all have elements of either soluble fiber and electrolyte repletions. Bananas are good soluble fiber, which help bind the contents of the intestine, and it provides potassium, which you tend to flush out with diarrhea. Rice means white rice, again, a soluble fiber component. Toast means white bread toast. These are the refined foods that normally are not the healthiest ones for us to eat, but in times of diarrhea, they are the 10 things that tend to bind our intestines to help modify the diarrhea. Of course, it's what binds people in normal life to make them constipated also. So it's not the diet that you want to be on all the time.
What foods would you just say avoid?
Greasy, fatty foods is absolutely the first. Caffeine is another, which means coffee, chocolates, that sort of thing. And then, again, any of those things with soluble fiber. Kernels of corn tend to pass through all of our intestinal tracts intact. They're just going to push along anything that's there. And one of the reasons that diarrhea is of such dire concern is not just the quality of life issue, which is significant in and of itself, but the fact that it can create wasting. And there are a couple ways it does that. One is simply what it's called gut transit time. Things pass through our system so rapidly that our intestinal tracts don't have time to absorb the nutrients from them. So though we're eating food, we're not getting the nutrients that we need from that food. And then secondly, a way that we absorb our food is that our intestinal tracts are lined with microscopic villi. They're little hair-like extensions that give the intestinal tract its enormous surface area that allows it to absorb food. And in times of diarrhea, that begins to slough off. So instead of having a football field surface area in your intestinal tract, you start having a small patio or just a tabletop worth of absorptive mucosa, and that prevents your being able to absorb nutrients also. And once you begin to lose that absorptive surface, then there's nothing you can do in terms until it restores itself. But no amount of food that you're going to eat is going to stick, as it were.
You say that the best advice you could give for diarrhea is to drink a drink that you have a recipe for. What is it, and why is it good for you?
Well, there are two things that happen in terms of diarrhea. Can also lead to dehydration. Mm-hmm. Actually, the most common AIDS-related admissions to San Francisco General Hospital have to do with dehydration from diarrhea. So it is of paramount importance that you continue your fluid intake. Along with that fluid intake, you want electrolyte repletion, which is what sports beverages are all about. We all tend to flush out salts when we sweat. This is why football players used to take salt tablets when they would practice in the summer heat. Potassium and chloride are the other electrolytes that we tend to just flush out very rapidly. The recipe that I give in the book for horchata, which is a traditional Spanish beverage, is actually one that has steeped the soluble fiber component out of the rice so that it's a rice water, and then it has some adding of baking soda, basically, in order to replete the sodium and the chloride that we've lost through flushing our systems through the diuretic effect of diarrhea.
How does it taste?
I wouldn't drink
You're
it.
You're hedging.
I wouldn't drink it for a cocktail in the afternoon, but I think it's fine.
You also recommend Gatorade.
Gatorade was designed exactly as an electrolyte repletion formula, and some people complain that it's salty, but the salt is one of the points of Gatorade, was that we flush the salt out of our systems when we sweat or when we pass a great deal of urine or when we vomit also. That's another potential source for dehydration.
Some people with AIDS try macrobiotic diets. Mm-hmm. Because they've heard good things about it. It's supposed to be cleansing. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, this is, I'm sure, going to be a hot button, but as I say in my book, that you could hardly design a worse diet for someone with any advanced HIV/AIDS. And there are several reasons for that. One, it is very low in protein as a diet, and protein intake is the single greatest nutritional importance for this diet. It is also very high in insoluble fiber, which tends to clean people out under the best of circumstances, but with someone with diarrhea can absolutely ravage their digestive tract. And it tends to be very low in calories in general, so that if you have someone who is in a wasting syndrome to begin with, you don't want to lower their caloric intake, you want to increase it. So it really has threefold strikes against it. Now, I'm sure I will get a lot of flack about this in general. There is some more or less anecdotal evidence that people who are HIV positive but asymptomatic might benefit from a macrobiotic diet, but there's not really any substantial research to prove that. The fact is, macrobiotics may be a perfect diet for everyone in America who's overweight and constipated, as most Americans are, but for someone who is rapidly losing weight and having copious diarrhea, it's apt to be deadly.
What do you think of a vegetarian diet?
I think it's perfectly possible to eat healthily with a vegetarian diet. Again, since protein intake is so important to someone with AIDS, vegetarian diets tend to be low in protein. It is possible to eat vegetarian diets that provide complementary proteins, like beans and rice. Everyone knows that makes a complementary protein. One of the things, though, to consider is that that there are sort of a hierarchy of quality of and bioavailability of proteins. For instance, if you eat beans and rice, you do get the 22 amino acids that you need for your body to utilize the protein, but your body has to work hard to combine those. An analogy, you've probably heard that it takes more calories to digest celery than there are in celery.
Mm-hmm.
So if you eat celery, you're actually sort of taking in negative calories. It's a little bit the same with beans and rice, is that it, your body has to work harder to process those complementary proteins to utilize them. Whereas if you eat eggs or dairy products or meat, your body does not have to work so hard. So you're having less outgo of metabolic energy vis-a-vis your intake of protein and calorie.
My guest is Robert Lehman. He's the author of the new book, Cooking for Life, A Guide to Nutrition and Food Safety for the HIV-Positive Community. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. Robert Lehman is my guest, and his new book is called Cooking for Life, A Guide to Nutrition and Food Safety for the HIV-Positive Community. Now, you got involved in this approach to cooking because you were the head chef in Philadelphia at a place called MANA, which stands for?
It's the Metropolitan AIDS Neighborhood Nutrition Alliance.
And so you prepared tens of thousands of dinners for people, dinners to be delivered to people with AIDS.
Yes.
So you'd cook these dinners in huge amounts and they'd be delivered to people with AIDS. Many of us have been in the hospital. We've tasted hospital food. What did you want your dinners to be like, especially when compared to hospital food?
Anything but that. I talked to a dietitian who works nationally at the AIDS conference in Vancouver, and she was telling me about a program that she had worked with where they had gotten rid of the food and beverage services at one hospital and hired chefs and individuals who cooked real food, and they found several things happen. One, their food costs went down. Two, their client stays became shorter, and the nutritional, because the nutritional profiles improved, because people were actually eating the food instead of just leaving it on the tray. So it is useless to give people food that they're not going to eat. And so when I was at MANA, we spent a great deal of time on presentation as well as the nutritional component and, you know, the appropriateness of the menu. But again, if you don't make the food appealing and people don't eat it, then it's the tree falling in the forest. It makes no sound at all.
What were your values in presentation of the food?
I did not want it to look like I didn't want it to look forbiddingly fancy. I didn't want it to look too much like a fancy restaurant, but I wanted it to look loving. I wanted it to look like some mom had fussed over it somewhere. And we did things like, we would carve up cherry tomatoes or put desserts on doilies and give them a shake of powdered sugar or something. I wanted it to look like fancy home cooking, but not like restaurant food particularly.
And not institutional.
Not institutional by a long stretch. One of the components of that is to keep the colors juxtaposed and very lively and bright. It's very easy when you're making food for someone who's sick that it all becomes beige. You know, there's all just a brown tonality to it.
Mashed potatoes and what else?
Mashed potatoes and roast chicken.
Anything
stewed.
Uh-huh.
But visual stimulation really does stimulate our appetite a great deal. And so keeping bright colors was important to me.
Now, how much of an issue was appetite for the people with AIDS you were cooking for?
Many people have diminished appetite, and it happens for lots of reasons. Early satiety, so that you just have a few mouthfuls of something and you're full, is one problem. Depression is, of course, a very common problem with people who are facing a terminal illness. And so you would have to continue to stimulate their interest in the food. One day I got a call from a MANA client, and he gave me exactly the compliment I would have asked for. He called and said, you know, this is almost gourmet food. I used to not be very interested in food, but now I kind of wait around and see what's coming for lunch. And that was exactly what the balance I had hoped to achieve, was not strangeness, but just something to pique his curiosity, to make him always wonder what the next day's meal was going to be. And I think that's important to do for someone who's sick.
I'm sure your whole sense of what it meant to be a chef changed when you were cooking for people who were sick. It wasn't just like a night out to relax and enjoy food. It was really like life and death.
Mm-hmm.
And you were cooking specially designed meals to help them get nutrients and to inspire them to eat,
mm-hmm.
and hopefully give them some pleasure, too. Did you get to meet many of the people who you were cooking for?
Well, in the early days of MANA, when our client base was not so large, I made a point of delivering to each client as they came onto our service, because I wanted to get a thorough understanding of who these people were, how they lived, what their homes, you know, looked like, who they were. And though I had dealt with people with AIDS in the past in several different capacities, I was never so impressed before by how people had this frail grasp on life. And the image that was so vivid to me was, we have all seen images of Holocaust survivors and how painfully emaciated they were. And I never could understand how someone could be that wasted and still be alive, how the body supports life at that point when it's little more than skeleton and bone. And yet, beginning to know some of those people with AIDS in that condition, I had a visceral understanding that I can't quite put into words, but somehow I could understand how those people continued to live. And so the food became support for that heroic effort to people maintaining their life.
Robert Lehman is the author of Cooking for Life, a guide to nutrition and food safety in the HIV-positive community. He's also projects coordinator for HIV nutrition research at the Graduate Hospital in Philadelphia. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.